welcome to American Girl Unboxed, the podcast where we dive deep into the stories, styles, crafts, and snacks of the American girls we grew up with. I'm Grace, and today we're discussing Meet Kirsten by Janet Shaw, illustrated by Renee Graff. Joining me to talk about the book today is Victor, and later we'll have Katie on to discuss the doll and extras. Let's start with a little spotlight on the time period, 1854. Victor, did you do any digging into this time period?
I did. I wanted to surround myself with as much information to place me into this time period, being that it's so drastically different than today. A few of the fun little tidbits. Well, not always fun. 1854 wasn't fun for everyone, but these are just some facts that I found. For starters, toys were rare and precious. Most kids only had one. So when you lose a toy, that might be your only one. And so later we dig into maybe just how important that toy can be, but also, a reason that you may lose a toy might be for the better of your family. Which I just thought, okay, 1854, that makes sense. You know, toys weren't as, there weren't toy stores everywhere like there are today. So I just thought, okay, cool. Now, Kirsten, she comes from Sweden. Huge waves of Swedish immigration occurred between 1840 and 1860. Tens of thousands of Swedes coming to the U.S., many of them settled in Minnesota. Minnesota, our neighbors. We live in Michigan. They are the state of 10,000 lakes or something like that. Well, we only have five, but they just happen to be really great. No bias. Ocean voyages took 6 to 10 weeks. Now, I don't know about you, but I love to travel. I don't know if I would if I had to do 6 to 10 weeks on a boat constantly rocking. And, you know, when you step ashore, it discusses it in the book a bit, just how it kind of like throws your balance off and you have to like readjust. Like, I could not imagine traveling to Sweden and then landing and not having, you know, needing some time to adjust. So very different, very fortunate that we can travel as much as we can today. And then cholera was a major threat, which is definitely a key character in this book. One that we'll dig into later, but cholera outbreaks were very common and deadly, especially near rivers and crowded cities. People didn't fully understand germs yet, making the disease terrifying and very unpredictable, just like the sudden illness that occurred in this book. And those are just some fun facts. Not always fun, but ones that I thought were interesting enough.
Thank you. Yes, those are interesting. I have a few to add on that go along with what you had mentioned. So in regards to the immigrants coming from Sweden, one of the main reasons, because I'm always curious what's kind of going on in that country at that time to cause people to immigrate. And so for this particular time period in Sweden, a lot of it was that the farmland was poor and people were starving. So many people came here for a better life and just for that chance to, you know, they do talk in the book about the good soil and things like that. So unfortunately, that's what was happening in Sweden at the time that did cause people to make that huge decision to
leave. Well, that makes sense. Once your dirt starts not paying off, you got to go find new dirt.
Yep. And then when people would immigrate to America, they would often only bring their most necessary items and maybe one or two special items. So I just was curious, Victor, if you had to move and only bring one or two sentimental things with you, would you pick?
That's really hard. You know, we don't have a lot of photo albums, but one that is near and dear to my heart is the photo album of our wedding. I think I would have to, you know, suck it up and make sure I get in there, whether, you know, it's like a last minute save or, you know, whatever the situation is. I want to make sure that that's something that I keep forever.
Well, that's a good answer.
I thought so.
I do like that book.
It's one of my favorites. I look at it from time to time.
Well, good answer.
what's your pick?
I know I was debating between, you know, I have a lot of photo albums from childhood, of my friends mainly. And so, you know, that, and then also the journals that I've kept. So things that just, you can't replace. Like Victor was joking to me about bringing his PS5, but obviously you could replace that. And like, I have a lot of stuff that I really value that like
very easy to replace.
Yeah. And like, I have like a book collection and a record collection and things that I love, but like I could replace those. So the things that I couldn't are some of these pictures that aren't digitized and then my journals that aren't digitized. And so that's like the, you know, I feel like a lot of the other stuff that we have like is stuff that if we had to,
yeah,
we could repurchase.
Yeah, thankfully a lot of the images, let's say of our daughter Veda, it's all up in the cloud somewhere.
Yeah.
Or a lot of really just photos from us meeting together and building our lives are stored in the cloud. So
yeah,
let's just hope that cloud stays.
I know. Don't know there. How it works, but hopefully it keeps working.
That's right.
Okay, and then I just had one last thing I wanted to share, which is that I do own two versions of Meet Kirsten. I have one from the 90s, and then I do have the most recent edition, which came out with like the newest version of the Kirsten doll, which I purchased. So in the most recent edition, a section was added to discuss the Dakota and Ojibwe people who lived on the land first before immigrants came. And so I thought that was really a great addition. And they also talk about how the U.S. government signed treaties with the Dakota and Ojibwe nations, but never fulfilled their promises. And instead, the U.S. encouraged Americans and European immigrants to move west and farm the land and reserved the poorer land for the Ojibwe and Dakota people to live on. So I thought that was some, I'm glad they added that context to this story. It, you know, it wasn't there in the original version, but it's good that they've added it since.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So are you ready to get... Oh, I will say too, I did look up some treats from that time period.
Here we go. I was like, what?
I know.
What are we skipping? Something important.
I didn't purchase them though. So,
oh, well then we can skip them.
Well, one of the two I already did purchase. It's the Necco wafer. So,
oh, nice.
I purchased that for Samantha, but it actually was also around during Kirsten's time. So.
Very nice to know.
She, you know, I don't really imagine her family eating those or like buying those.
I mean, again, they've been around since the dinosaurs, so
not quite. I don't remember exactly what year, but somewhere.
When you bite into it, you know you're biting into history.
The other one, which kind of surprised me, and this is something that I don't know that I've actually had, and I was excited to purchase this for us, so maybe I will for one of the next books.
Yes.
But it's something that I've seen in the store and I don't think I've ever had. It's the Whitman's chocolate boxes. So it's like this box of assorted chocolates that I have seen in the store. It's like a yellow box. And if you saw it, you probably would recognize it because it's just something you see. Hmm. It's at like Walgreens. It's at just like grocery stores.
Is it like at the checkout? Like, do they have it next to, you know, the candy?
I don't know.
That's most tempting, right?
I don't think
as you
so.
Put stuff on the belt?
No, I don't think so. Because it's like usually a bigger box.
Okay.
It's like a box of assorted chocolates, I think.
Okay.
Anyway, so that was around since then. So
what was it called?
Whitman's chocolate.
Yeah, it does not ring a bell.
I feel like if anything, maybe I had a kid buy it for me when I was a teacher as like a gift for Christmas or whatever.
And you said it was chocolate?
Mm-hmm.
It's probably delicious.
Yeah. So I will try to remember to purchase that for us so we can taste test it because that is one that I would be curious to try. All right, let's get into the book. Let's start with chapter one. Kirsten is on a ship with her friend Marta. They see America coming into view. A storm is coming, so Kirsten's papa gets the two girls down into the hold. The hold is cramped and sour-smelling. The trapdoor gets locked against the wave, and 20 families are stuck down there during the storm. There's also barely any light, just one oil lamp in the entire space. And I don't know about you, but I just definitely painted a picture for me.
Yes.
That I was like, that sounds horrible.
Right.
And I think Janet really does a good job throughout this book of not sugarcoating the experience of immigrating to America.
Yeah, I definitely appreciated the very sharp imagery that she really just kind of like laid out throughout her storytelling. And it definitely painted a vibrant picture of just being super uncomfortable. And there's a lot of uncertainty. They're traveling. But still, she was able to keep Kirsten's charm, which was nice. Even through her fear and her not fully understanding her surroundings, because it was all so new from the time on the boat and onward. I don't know. There was some charm to Kirsten that I admired. But yes, it was definitely a very clear image of this is not the means of travel one would select today if they had options.
Right. Yeah, Kirsten definitely does maintain a fairly positive outlook throughout this. She does a good job of...
Not easy to do. And I think with kids too, it's like you really can't fully grasp maybe when you're in danger as much as you can as an adult. But honestly, who doesn't every once in a while think, man, that'd be nice to just kind of like live a little bit for a moment, not knowing all of the crap that is maybe happening around you as an adult, right? Like, oh, we got bills to pay and the world and this and that. Sometimes it's like, no, today's Saturday. The sun's out. We're going to go play.
Yeah. Speaking of that, the next part of the book is Kirsten being comforted by her mom, basically. So as you're saying, you know, the kids do have sort of that blissful ignorance a little bit. Yes. I mean, obviously they can tell if they're uncomfortable and seasick and all that, but they don't maybe have all the same fears and worries that the adults have. And so during this storm, Kirsten is able to crawl into her narrow bunk that she shares with her mama, who has been sick the whole 2-month trip. There's an image here of Kirsten and her mama on the bunk. And I wanted to point it out because you can see Kirsten's lunchbox under the oil lamp, which is something that I own, like a version of her lunch.
Oh, wow. Nice.
And I just think it's such a cool box. It's one of my favorite lunch sets ever. And it's a really pretty wooden box that she has that she keeps her food in. So anyway, while they're in the bunk bed, mama tries to soothe Kirsten by talking about her Uncle Olav and his letter. He wrote saying he needed help on his farm in Minnesota. That is where Kirsten's family is going, and they will live near their uncle, his widowed wife, and her 2 daughters. Then the storm passes, and Kirsten's older brother, Lars, lets them know they'll arrive in New York the next morning, but they won't be able to leave the ship until the health inspector looks them over. Kirsten's 5-year-old brother is worried because their mom has been sick, but their dad assures them that she was just seasick and they are looking for more serious things like cholera, which nobody has.
Yes, but I remember at this point in the book, I was very relieved. I think when the dad maybe explained to Lars that, like, no, you know, they're checking for diseases that can really hurt people. Your mother doesn't have that. So I was just like, oh, okay. Because as soon as I heard that, oh, she's sick, well, she, you know, comforting Kirsten, I go, oh boy, I don't think her mom's making it off this boat. But
okay, so you were worried about the mom, but when they said that part about the cholera, you kind of were like, oh, okay, like we're good, we're clear.
Yeah, I was basically like, well, because I didn't know what she had, and back then, like a sniffle could turn into something real serious, and so I was like, oh, boy, and you know. From the little that I know of American Girl, but the little that I do know, I know sometimes these stories don't have the most positive moments in them. And from what we've read, too, I think some of it has come to really just, you know, represent accurately of the time period. And I think a loss like this would reflect it pretty accurately.
Yeah.
I just was like not ready for it in chapter one if it did happen, but I was bracing myself until finally I got a little levity when the explanation came to Lars that, no, she's fine. We're fine. We're going to make it to New York. And I'm like, yes.
I did tell you, I think that I cried during this book. So
you did.
You might have had that in your head as well.
You did. But I don't think this is the only one. So it's like, was it this one or was it the other one?
Yeah, I have cried.
It could be a few.
I've cried in a few.
That's cute.
I did cry the most during this one, though. But
really?
Yes. Okay. So we'll get to that. All right. So the next morning comes. They pass their inspections and arrive in America. Now it's chapter 2. Kirsten waits in the grass with her mom and little brother while her dad and older brother buy tickets for the rest of their journey. Kirsten reflects on how nicely everyone is dressed and that she feels left out with only her amber necklace from her grandma as something fancy, which that part stuck out to me because I just thought about during this time period, the thought of leaving your grandma and knowing that you're probably never going to see her again, like just making that kind of choice. It's one thing when you lose someone unexpectedly or that's also horrible, but just to make the choice, the decision, like, hey, I'm saying goodbye probably forever. I mean, you could write letters, but that just, my heart broke a little bit thinking about that scene where Kirsten's grandma gives her the necklace. And
that is something that I think continues to evolve over time is our ability to connect. And I think with new technologies, like we're able to connect much more, but sometimes we find ourselves connecting less. And so something that I know my mom will often point out is like, man, I wish I had all of this technology to have been better in connection with her parents that were living in the Dominican Republic while we were here in the States. Like, yeah, they spoke on the phone a lot, but could you imagine FaceTiming if she had that option? So not at all the same as to leaving your grandma and then not knowing if you're ever going to speak to, hear of, or see again. But certainly something that it just like I was able to really feel still in knowing that, like, yeah, that would be tragic, because I feel so appreciative of the abilities we have today of being able to connect across any distance.
Yeah. And I think also just like speaks to the immense bravery that immigrants have.
100%.
So her father and Lars come back with the tickets and a handful of cherries. Mama is worried about the long journey ahead, but Papa again reassures her that the agent will be with them until the Mississippi, and then it's only a few weeks more after that. Kirsten and their little brother Peter leave to go buy milk and bread with Papa. Kirsten carries the milk pitcher, which is really pretty in the drawing. So I looked it up to see if it was like sold with the doll. But while Kirsten does have a milk pitcher you could have purchased, the one that you could purchase was different than the one in the drawing. So just a little fun fact for people who care about the accessories.
There you go.
Kirsten gets some bread and savors it as she walks down the streets of New York, taking in the sights and sounds. Kirsten takes a moment to pause by a berry seller when she's bumped by a boy. By the time she looks up, she can't see her papa anywhere. Then, instead of saying put, she runs to find him. She gets a pretty good idea to look for the milk shop, hoping they're already there, but she ends up in an even more crowded part of the city and can't find the milk shop. Kirsten tries to ask for directions back to the park where her mama is, but everyone either laughs at her or ignores her. She runs again, but ends up in a rough area, so tries to go backward, but ends up on a residential street. I was getting very anxious.
So when I was reading this, I too was getting anxious. And then it wasn't until I think she, or maybe it was like stated before, but like I just remember her drawing the boat in the, on the ground.
We're not there yet, but yes.
But yeah, so, but like, yeah, it wasn't until then that I like realized again that like, oh, she's doing all of this not really being able to communicate.
Yes. Holy, that's why the people are.
Like, you're already young. You're already traveling from just basically another planet, landing on somewhere new, somewhere as busy as New York City in 18, which New York City has been busy for a long time at this point. New York City is still a lot of people, a lot of bustle and hustle, tussle and that. And for a child of her age to just kind of like be lost in that situation, I mean, this is probably worst case scenario, hour one into the new land for this family. And so, yeah, super anxious throughout.
Yeah, that's like a parent's worst fear is losing their child in a situation like that.
Have you, as a kid, did you ever get lost?
I don't think so. I think I was either, I can't remember if this was a story about my sister or me. One of us got lost in a department store, but I think it was my sister, was hiding under like a clothing rack. So she was like hiding, but my mom was like panicking.
Uh-huh.
And I think they like put an announcement out and stuff on the speakers. And then they finally found her hiding.
That's
like she
amazing.
Was just trying to have fun. But
yeah, yeah, yeah. So department store is typically a really there must be something in department stores that just has kids like dashing for this or that and then suddenly being lost. Because I remember, I think it was me, my brother, we were lost at a department store. We were hanging around the coat racks and then we noticed all of a sudden it was just us. And I remember, and I don't know if I'm remembering this correctly, or maybe it could just be like mild trauma of an adult wanting to help. And I was like, you can't talk to me. And just like, just, you know, running away. But that was my instance. And then there was one when I was older, my little sister got lost at a football game, high school football game. And we're looking for her. I remember being super scared. I was like, oh my goodness. Because as a kid, you see a lot of stuff on TV, right, at that point where you're like, okay, I've, you know, try not to think the worst, but I don't have much to go off of, but some of the worst. We hear this announcement from the person who was calling the game, or was the broadcaster or the announcer at the game. It's like, we have a child here. Her name is now, you know, and just we're like, oh my gosh. I think we found her. So we get up there. And sure enough, she was up there just hanging out at the press box with a sucker. So, you know.
That is so terrifying, though.
Super scary.
Yeah. So far, knock on wood, have not had a moment like that with Veda, where, because oh even gosh. Just like even 2 seconds when they're out of your sight in a busy space is stressful. So
yes,
back to Kirsten,
please.
Sure. Her dad is freaking out right now.
100%.
And Kirsten is too. She plops down on some steps. Cause she's in this residential area. She's crying. She's worrying that her family might leave her for Minnesota. And honestly, as I was reading this, I was like, would they, like, is this something? Like, I'm like, probably not, but like, I don't know. Like,
this is
a situation that's pretty extreme.
1854 was a different time.
After a while, a kind woman puts her hand on Kirsten's shoulder. Kirsten tries to tell her she's lost, but the woman doesn't understand. Then Kirsten gets an idea, and this is what Victor was talking about before, where she draws her ship in the dirt. The woman smiles and takes her to where the ships are. So they found a way to communicate, thankfully.
So smart.
Kirsten sees her mama and papa and takes off running toward them. They embrace, and her mama assures her that they'd never leave Kirsten, which answered my question.
Right. Like, okay, they're not monsters, Grace. But can we just give it up a moment here for Kirsten? Because I don't know about you, but reading that entire thing, I think I was probably 10 times way more anxious than the author kind of led me to believe that Kirsten was. Like, Kirsten, to me, seems super calm throughout this whole endeavor, from what I can remember. Like, I don't think she was, like, as anxious as I was feeling if I were in her situation. So I was like, oh, she doesn't seem that, you know, worried.
I don't know. I think she was pretty frantic, but I mean, she held it together better than I would have.
Yeah. As I, because again, that nice woman who helped her, that was the woman that I ran away from at the department store screening.
True.
So I wouldn't have had the opportunity to draw a boat in the sand because I was running.
Yeah. You would have just been left behind.
Yeah. I would have been freaking out. And I thought, you know, for her as a kid, guess they were just built different in 1854.
All right, so chapter 3, before leaving the next day, Kirsten sees Marta. She is sad to learn that Marta won't be leaving until the next day, so they won't be together. Marta worries that they'll never see each other again, and Kirsten reassures her that they're both going to Minnesota, so we'll be bound to see each other. Kirsten is sad too, though, and to make both her and Marta feel better, she repeats what her grandmother told her. When you're lonely, look at the sun. Remember that we see the same sun.
Did you have any thoughts on that advice or that story that your grandma told? Because
I thought it was sweet, but ouch.
Yeah, who's looking at the sun?
You could say moon. I feel like moon is the more common.
Yeah, look at the moon, look at the sky, but do not stare at that sun.
The girls promise each other they'll think of each other when they look at the sun and say a little prayer for one another. Kirsten sighs and feels homesick, then heads to where the agent is with the rest of the families who will be traveling on a train with them. They all get into the train. And I was surprised to hear that it sounds even worse than the ship.
Yes.
I don't know. Like, I just thought, okay, a train, that's going to be like a nice change of pace. No. It's hot. Cinders fill the air. They aren't allowed to open the windows for safety, which, like, I don't understand that. But maybe they just were, it was new to have something moving that fast on land. So they didn't like the idea of windows. But they are on that train for a few days and it is hard to breathe. People are mostly silent and don't have an appetite, which, like, that just sounded so claustrophobic, so horrible.
Yeah, it definitely is not like traveling in a train today. These are trains that are designed to essentially do the bare minimum of housing people in motion.
Yeah.
Where the comforts, they're not designed to be there for anyone other than the function of the train. And it's that is we're trying to haul and move things, people across great distances. How are we doing this? Well, we're doing it on railroad tracks and a lot of steam, a lot of smoke. And so the seating, all hard, like, you know, crowded, very uncomfortable means of travel. Even then it was like, you know, yeah, it was adventurous, but very, very just like not fun.
Right. Well, they finally arrived to Chicago, where they will rest for a few days before boarding wagons to head to the Mississippi River. They're at a boarding house, and Kirsten goes to the porch to get some sun. While out there, she sees Marta. They run to each other and whirl around. The two families eat together and say they will stay together until they reach Minnesota. Kirsten thinks America finally feels like home, with good food and good friends. And everything's happy. We're good.
We're so good.
Until
chapter four. Oh, what's it titled? A Sad Journey. Oh, great. Let's get into this one now.
The chapter of tears.
Very little chill on that transition, but yeah, let's go for it.
So the next day, they are at the Mississippi, ready to board a riverboat. Kirsten grabs Marta to run to the top deck, but she is told to get down by a sailor. Later, Papa explains that the upper deck is for rich people. Kirsten asks if they paid more money, could they go up there? Her dad says they need all their money to get them to Olav's farm. Mama reassures Papa that he's managed their money well, then crossly tells Kirsten not to ask for so much. Now, this also like reminds me of what you were saying earlier about just the parents carrying different burdens than the children. So like, right. Mama is cross and Kirsten like clocks that and she's okay. Like,
what's up with her? She's not like this normally.
Yeah, that's not like her to be kind of grumpy.
She's not sick anymore. So what's the excuse now?
Right. So she asks her mom what's wrong. Mama confesses that she's worried because as they were boarding, the sailors were burying a passenger who died of cholera. Lars reassures her that they are all healthy, but Mama says that cholera can kill anyone and that they will all need to pray for their safe arrival to Uncle Olav's farm. For the next 2 days, Kirsten plays with Marta on the ship, but on the third morning, Marta isn't there. Kirsten sees Marta's dad staring out at the water. That was one of the parts that I started crying.
You knew right away, right?
Because I knew what was going to happen. Like, I've read these books before.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, I knew what was going to happen. Aww. And just, like, thinking of being in his position and just like, I'm tearing up right now, but just like thinking as a parent, like yeah. staring out into the water, just feeling helpless. And like, mm-hmm. I think in that situation, it would have been easier to be the mom, like taking care of. So the mom is like taking care of Marta. We'll find out. And I feel like that would almost be easier because just to be the dad and not have, be able to help at all and just know that like your child is potentially dying. And
yeah.
anyway, that just touched me and just yeah. that scene.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, that's something that just speaks to just the love that a parent and a child have that sometimes goes beyond words, beyond explanation. It's just an understanding that kind of develops naturally. I definitely felt that when I read her not being present, I thought, okay, this is, I think where
you kind of got the feeling.
Yeah. Kind of yeah. like the feeling I had originally with her mom mm. that kind of like immediately the author was like, nope, not this one. With this one, it felt definitely more intentional how the direction was going. Like there's an absence then, or before that, it was the seeing the burial of a cholera death mm-hmm. and then transitioning to her absence. So everything was kind of like stacking up in a way that I think was intentional and heading towards, I think, a great loss.
Yeah, and I got a little ahead of myself, but when Kirsten sees Marta's dad, she asks, like, hey, where's Marta? And that's when he tells her that Marta is sick with cholera.
Yep.
He says that Marta had doubled up with pain overnight, and now she's in the sick bay, which is, like, shocking to Kirsten because they were just playing together the yeah, day before.
Just like
so
that.
So it happened super quick. Kirsten asks if she can see her, but Marta's dad tells her she must not or she will get sick too. He says Marta's mother is with her and that's all they can do. Kirsten didn't listen though and went to see Marta. Marta looks to be in extreme agony, and when Kirsten goes to step closer, Marta's mom sees her and tells her she must leave and that Marta will get better. Mm. So I was curious about cholera. I know you mentioned it and you gave a few facts.
Very high overview. It was not much in detail.
I didn't pull much either, but I had a few questions I specifically was wondering. So it was the most fatal pandemic of the 1800s.
Cholera.
And, yes. And okay. 1854 was considered the worst year. So I wonder if that's why they actually set the book in this
That's
time
amazing.
Period.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Yeah.
Huh.
And you had already talked about this part, but contaminated water is thought to be how the disease was transmitted, which they didn't obviously know.
Because oftentimes right away. It would be like around rivers and like water, but essentially was yeah. kind of like a common factor.
And then this is the thing I was most curious about was the percentage of people who died once they had cholera.
Oh, man.
So according to the National Institute of Health, it was between 54% and 68%.
Holy cow.
Which that is just wild. It did say, I did read that children were slightly less likely to die.
Okay.
But that is such a high percentage.
That
so
is.
Very, very terrible. It sounds like a terrible disease. So Kirsten apparently doesn't know too much about it because she is not leaving that sick bay. She wants to stay by Marta, which like I get. I mean, but
she's a girl's girl
to her own detriment. But then her mom thankfully finds her and makes her leave. Yes. That night, Kirsten wakes with a start. She runs down to the sick bay and sees Marta is no longer there. Marta must have gotten better, she thinks. She runs up to the deck to find her friend. The sun is just rising and the riverboat was anchored. Sailors are carrying a wooden box off the ship. Kirsten sees Marta's parents at the railing holding each other. Kirsten asks her father where Marta is. This is the second time tears came for me. Yeah. He points to the box, then says Marta died in the night and is now in heaven. Kirsten shouts that she can't be dead, then starts sobbing and tries to say Marta's name but can't. Then Kirsten felt her mom's arms around her.
I hated reading that. I think reading it or seeing it, whenever you see a child size coffin, it's just like there's nothing good that comes from that. So it was super sad to read, and it just like humbled me for sure.
Were you surprised that they went that far in this book?
No. Okay. Not from my understanding going into this adventure with you and American Girl was that. And I think it was because of like different like SNL sketches of like, the one in particular where as soon as one would cough, you know, then you would just cut off to her funeral or whatever. So I knew that these stories, okay, they wouldn't like poke at that if there wasn't some form. And you even like kind of like told me like, yeah, some of these stories are going to be like real raw. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I think I told you
like,
that
I
one
wasn't
of them-
like super, surprised. And I think the author, and I would say credit to the author for kind of like setting it up for me where it wasn't like a, you know, oh my gosh, the Dink Divas, their dad, you know, it wasn't that type of sudden news. Finding out that the Dink Divas' dad was the dude at the beach on a previous podcast episode. Raquel throwback. Thank you. With this one, it was gradual, still shocking and still jarring just being that it was a child, especially one that was as close. Cause like I didn't know Marta very much, very long.
Yeah.
She seemed very nice, but I know had it been Nelly, I wouldn't know what I would have done.
Yeah. That would be horrible. So, I think I had mentioned terrible. To you that a best friend dies at one point, and this is what I was referring to.
Oh, this is the one. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there might be more. I haven't read all the books, so this is one that I know of, but. Yeah, I do think that Janet did do a good job of sort of foreshadowing when she mentions cholera in the very first chapter. So like you said, it's not doesn't feel like it comes completely out of the blue or anything.
And kept it very accurate to the time.
Yeah. One thing that I do want to point out that happened at the end is that so Kirsten's mom puts her arms around her. Then her dad pats her shoulder and tells her that's enough crying. but her mom like says like, hey, no, like let her have her tears. Like,
yes.
Thankfully.
Yes.
And I just like thought. I don't know if
let her have her tears is what she said. When I thought, what a beautiful way of putting that.
Yes. And it reminded me, the dad specifically reminded me of a scene from The Princess Diaries. Have you seen that movie?
Yes, sort of.
Okay. Well, there's like a line that my friends and I would quote and make fun of all the time, which is one that the best friend, I think her name is Lily, says to Mia, Anne Hathaway's character. So Anne Hathaway's character has lost her dad. And the best friend at one point goes like, geez, what has it been? Like 2 months already? Like basically like, get over it.
Dang.
And we always like would like laugh at that and like make fun of it because like who would say that? Like if your dad passes away, like 2 months is nothing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so her dad was kind of making me think of that. Like, hey, like you've cried for 2 seconds. Get over it.
Right. But, okay. That's yeah. No, I'm so happy that the mom stepped in because, you know, even through the tough experiences and the scary journey that they're going through, immigrating to a new country and land, she was there. And because again, just prior to this, like she was being very realistic as to like, hey, you know, you don't understand what's going on, like your dad's managing the little money that we have very well, you should be grateful, this or that. But at that moment she, you know, took a step back from I think being a parent. And I mean, I guess in a way you're being a parent because you're going to be a friend, but for me it felt way more special than just a parent. At that moment it was just seriously like two human beings connecting, and there's nothing more, you know, connectedness than I think like a mother, daughter, a parent and a child. But like it just seemed so cool that she was able to really just kind of reel back and say stop, like I get it, yeah, we she could probably stop crying, but at this moment, let her have this.
Yeah.
All right.
And I do think that idea of suck it up is something that is in a lot of our cultures. Like, I definitely grew up with that to an extent. Like, not that parents were heartless, but like, you know, it was kind of like, hey, like, resiliency is the most important thing. And they're in this scenario where like they're just trying to survive basically and get to where they need to go. So like, I can't understand why the dad was sort of like, okay, like, what we need to just be resilient and move forward. But yeah, to your point, like, it's just nice that the mom was like, okay, we can take a beat.
Yeah, like we did grow up in the 90s. So like, there was still a little bit of that in comparison, I think, to now.
Oh yeah.
So I'd be curious to know, like, you know, the big shifts in what it would be like for us, you know, being 9 or 10 years old today versus in the 90s. Like, I enjoyed the 90s, but yeah, at times it was like, yeah, you better just suck it up and like move on. Otherwise, you're going to be here a while.
Yeah, I think, and I think there's probably a happy balance between the two methods. But
I think so.
Anyway, we're not experts here, so.
No, not by any long shot.
We'll move to chapter 5, the final chapter. So they arrive to Minnesota and leave the boat, which Kirsten doesn't even want to look at when they leave. There isn't even a sun in Minnesota for Kirsten to look to. So she wanted to, like,
cloudy.
Yeah, she wanted to think of Marta.
Just her misery.
Yes, she wanted to think of Marta, but everything is wet and miserable. But still, she whispers, God bless you, Marta. Which I'm sure right now, Minnesota also is like that because we are in a polar vortex. And
oh boy.
Michigan is bad. Minnesota is bad. A lot of states are really bad right now.
I saw the sun come out yesterday and I thought, oh, that looks so warm outside. And then you go outside to start your car. You're like, no, it's not. It's still freezing. It's below zero.
Yep. Today was, I think, two? 2 degrees?
It technically two, felt more like 10 or something.
Negative.
Negative 10.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Anyway, we've been hunkered inside. So,
but she didn't get to look at the sun, so at least her retinas were saved for one day.
Yeah, that's true. So Kirsten's mom tells her to cheer up because when her papa and the boys come back with the wagon, it will only take a few hours to reach Uncle Olaf's farm. When papa comes back, though, he isn't smiling. We just can't catch a break. They don't have enough money to rent a horse and cart, which means that they will have to leave their two trunks holding all their worldly possessions behind. Guess he didn't manage that money so well after all.
He went ahead and went to the ice cream shop and had one cone, and then there goes their luggage.
Yeah. The family starts pulling out what they can carry, things like blankets and tools, with the idea that the rest will be shipped later. Mm. Papa tells Kirsten she must leave her doll behind because this is what Victor was talking about earlier, because they need her hands to carry too, which is just so sad. She just lost her best friend.
Yep.
Now she has to leave her doll behind.
Yep.
She knows she can't say no to him, so she puts it all in the trunk. Yep. Kirsten kisses her doll's cheek, then her dad and Lars haul them off to the warehouse.
What a terrible start to your American journey, I think. What a terrible start. I could not have pictured, I think, a more chilling beginning for a child coming into a new world. Now, I will say, I was kind of excited about getting to this point of this podcast with you in this discussion, because I thought, would she answer me if I asked this question?
Oh gosh.
Here is the question.
Okay.
Will you? No. The question is, of all your American Girl dolls,
Kirsten, wait, which one I take?
Which one would you be most sad to lose?
Kirsten. Yeah. Fitting for the story. Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know.
Which is it? Do you have more than one Kirsten?
No, I don't.
Okay. You have one, and it's the one that is dressed just like the one in the cover, right? Where it's like her bonnet. Or is it Kirsten, the Christmas one?
She's the same girl, but she has different outfits.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. You've seen her in a few, because I've been trying to take pictures for Instagram. So okay. You've seen her. I've changed her in a couple outfits. And she also was the one, I had her in her St. Lucia outfit, actually. But
yep.
I had her in that all throughout Christmas and had her like on a shelf in our living room.
Okay. So yeah, no, you definitely answered that and answered that quickly. So
yeah, I don't know why. Like, I don't think I anticipated her being my favorite doll, but once I purchased her, I just love her so much. I think I just got a really cute one, and I don't know. I just like her. So
cool.
That's what I choose.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for asking.
Yep.
All right. So they start walking. It's rainy. It's muddy. It's miserable. Finally, the sky's clear though. And so they stop for lunch. Papa says the soil is good and they will have a good life there. Kirsten picks a daisy for her mom to wear in her collar. So I feel like there's some levity, finally, a little bit of lightness here.
Yeah.
And then finally, they see the farm. Lars and Peter start running and calling that they're there. A man comes from the barn with a smile like Papa's, which this is the first that I feel like I recognize that this was the dad's brother's farm. I wasn't sure how the uncle was related, but it's a smile like Papa's. So I'm guessing it's the dad's brother who owns the farm.
Yeah.
A woman and two girls come out of the house shouting hello. Kirsten gets shy and hides behind her mom. The taller girl, Lisbeth, takes Kirsten's bundle and tells her she's watched for her every day. The smaller girl, Anna, says she has too. Everyone is hugging and crying and lifting each other off their feet. Once inside, Aunt Inger notices that they are all soaked and gives them clothes. She gives Kirsten her blue meat dress, which is the dress she comes in.
Iconic.
Yes.
I am told.
Kirsten climbs up to the loft where Lisbeth and Anna help her get dressed, then head down to dinner. The next morning, Kirsten wakes up in her own bed in their small cabin. Kirsten thinks to herself that she's home and she lives right next door to her cousins who will be her friends. Lisbeth and Anna take Kirsten to their fort, which is just for girls. The girls tell Kirsten to choose a spot for her doll, and Kirsten finds a nice moss-covered spot. The book ends with the girls happily playing.
The end. Yeah. It was... but it ended in a... Yeah, it's happy. So it was like a happy ending in that sort that like all the girls were playing. But I thought, if anything, it was still some sadness lingering over. Because she's still, you know, she's with family, but like family she's never met before. She's still in a new land. She's got to play with somebody else's doll. And then Marta's dead. So not too much to be excited about, but at least it ended in that. But it was a great like landing for the books to come, I think.
Yeah,
so it set it up real nicely.
I do think it sets it up, and I don't remember all the details of all the books, but I do think it sets it up to be a slightly more difficult story than Samantha's, for example.
Like, so far by a mile. Yes.
So, like, obviously Samantha lost her parents, like that's horrible.
Samantha, oh no, you got salt in your peppermint ice cream. God.
Yeah. So I think just like comparing that to this and like,
not even close.
Yeah. So far it's been rougher. And I think that's why I think this series spoke to me less as a child, because I think it was almost too much for me. Like, I think I just was as a kid, I needed a little bit more lightness in the stories.
Sure.
And Molly's were my favorite. And I think probably when we get to her, we'll find that she is maybe a little bit lighter. I mean, it's World War II, but I think that like she lives kind of a sort of secluded life from all of that. So anyway, I'm a little bit nervous to see how the rest of the series will go, but I really like this book. So I'm curious, what would you rate this book?
Okay, so this I was going back and forth on, and it's because I the more books I read, I think the more specific my kind of like grading scale becomes. Like before it was like I was tossing out a 4 and a 5. Like I just enjoyed it, like I enjoyed a good book that was told well, so boom, I have to give it a 5, right? Because it didn't offend me in any way or like hurt my feelings. So now, having read this one in the point of all the books we've read so far, I have to be more critical toward it. And I think for me it felt rushed away in a way where like each chapter, like okay, the first chapter's on the boat, second chapter is in New York City, third chapter is in on the train, and then like it just felt like three or four books in one. And I wanted to spend maybe a little bit more time in those different settings. They're traveling, so it makes sense for me as a reader. I think I got a little bit comfortable with the longer stories.
Yeah, because we've read a bunch.
This one, I read this in like an hour.
Yeah.
Essentially. I started reading two chapters, and then today I just read the whole book in about an hour. And it just like, maybe it just felt fast because not at all as many words or pages. And so given that fact, and I really do like the versions that we have, I think there's just like the way that like the set looks together, and you know, they are short and sweet.
Victor's talking about like the original parchment style covers.
Thank you. I felt that because this one was about her traveling and getting to, I don't know. I just thought maybe we could have started, like, I don't know. Did we need that boat scene or, like, maybe start it somewhere else? Like, it just felt very, very separated where, I don't know how many books are in this. How many?
Six.
There's six, like, books Samantha, in the series. Yeah. Oh, okay. So it's just like, oh, right. Because they do the meet Kirsten and then Kirsten saves the day.
Kirsten learns the lesson. Right, yeah.
Learns a lesson. Okay. In comparison to the other ones, I would give this a very strong and hearty 3 out of 5. All right. Please don't.
It's okay.
Come after me.
It's funny because
I'm ready. I think I'm excited for where this is going to go.
Okay.
I think there's definitely a lot of potential. And so I don't want to give it a super high score to only be let down. Like, I want to be as realistic and true to the books I've read so far. With this one, I didn't like the constant jumping around. 3 out of 5. But a very, like I said, strong 3 out of 5.
Well, I would give it a 5.
A 5 out of 5, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean,
if it's going to make you, if it brings you to the emotions that it did, like, I that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
It was a good book. It was well done, and it was emotional. And again, probably the roughest start.
Yeah. I think, so I would give it a 5 out of 5. Especially right after I finished, I felt very strong about it. I think if I were to say right now, would I rather reread this book or Meet Samantha? I probably would pick Meet Samantha because I do think it is just a little bit of a tougher book. So
yeah.
There's just more hardship throughout it that I don't know that I would want to revisit it a ton, but I did really like it and appreciate it.
Aww.
Yeah. And I'm excited for the rest of the series, but also apprehensive. Same. So we'll see what happens.
I think at this point, like, hopefully it's just her getting into school or, like, you know, having a crush on a boy or her maybe failing a spelling bee or something. Just please give her something worse, or not worse, but less impactful and heavy as losing your best friend.
Yeah.
Who was supposed to be your ride or die.
Yeah.
Oh, no pun intended.
Yeah.
In this whole new world. So.
Well, thank you, Victor. Now we'll move on to Katie to discuss everything else. Hi, Katie.
Hi.
Did you read Meet Kirsten?
I did. And what a journey.
What did you think?
I really, as an adult, oh my God, it was just so sad to kind of go through and read this story. And it has a happy ending. Yeah. So I actually had Kirsten as a kid, and I do not remember pretty much any aspect of her stories at all, besides that she was living on the frontier in Minnesota. So just, I felt for her so many times throughout this book, like from being on this scary ship where you're crammed, it's not comfortable. Like, nobody likes being tossed around and just in a room with no airflow, or just, like, it just sounded so scary. And then she gets lost in New York, and that's also scary. I mean, I feel like we've all had that moment of, like, losing our parent in the grocery store and just running around frantically trying to find them. So that one I feel like is really easy to empathize with. And then just her losing her best friend on the trail, like, just such a dark kind of turn for Kirsten initially. And that happens in, like, chapter 2 or 3. So it's just such a, I feel like she goes through a lot in such a short period of time, and you just have to feel for her because she's just so sweet and empathetic. And I feel like just scared to make this huge transition. And who doesn't feel like that when they're moving or, you know, making a huge change in their life? So definitely enjoyed this book, I think, more as an adult than I did as a kid. And I honestly don't remember any of the details from being a kid. So I must have blocked it out or something. But yeah, 5 stars.
Yeah.
So good.
That's what I gave it to. I agree. It's well written. It really brings you in, even though it's only 60 pages. And I agree. It's like you really can empathize when they start talking about the ship. And then even like the train, you think, oh, a train ride isn't that bad. But the way they describe how hot it is and stuffy on the train, and then that also sounds terrible. So just like all of the hardships they had through this journey.
Yeah. And I mean, it was kind of a shock to me that they had passenger trains back during this time, too. I think I just initially assumed they would be taking a wagon for the whole journey. And so you can't imagine that, like, crawling on this new contraption is very fun or exciting because it just seems so dangerous and scary. And
yeah,
there's smoke everywhere. And yeah, so I feel like all of it, I was just like, man, I need this girl to have a break somewhere.
Yes. Thankfully, like you said, it ends well. And I do think that throughout the book, they do have moments of lightness where, you know, Kirsten is excitedly doing something that a kid would do and, yes, you know, excited about arriving to America or whatever. You know, like there's moments that
there's fear and apprehension and also excitement.
Yes. So. Yeah. It's a heavy book, but it doesn't feel overwhelmingly so while you're reading it.
No. But still, yeah.
Yeah.
A great story.
Yes. And I agree with you. I think I like it, or I know I like it more as an adult than a kid, because I just remember not really loving these books as a kid. And I think probably because they were a little bit tougher.
Yeah.
Content.
Tougher of a read.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Now, when we think about media pairings, what would you pair to go with this book?
So I have two. The first one is Chasing Redbird by Sharon Creech.
I love Sharon Creech.
I know. I love all of her books. And I've honestly read more of them as an adult than as a kid. But they're just so, they're such good writing. And they, I think, have messages that can, you can relate to it regardless of what age you are. So Chasing Redbird follows, it's published in 1997, and it follows a 13-year-old named Zinni. And she and her family live very close by to each other, so similar to Kirsten, where they're moving right next door to her cousins. And she's really close with her aunt and uncle, and then her aunt passes away. And so it follows Zinni as she clears kind of a trail through the woods and just kind of like deals with her internal struggle and like her connection to her aunt and just finding her own identity along this trail that she's clearing. And I don't remember too much about the book, but I honestly remember like loving it as a kid. Like, I think it was just, I reread it a ton. I just loved the storyline. And it's kind of just like a metaphor for her like grief and just finding her place in this new world without her aunt. And I feel like that very much relates back to Kirsten's story, finding her place in America without Marta and not speaking the language and, you know, moving next to family who are family, but she doesn't really know them. And so I think just a lot of parallels, even though it's not set in the same time, but very much a recommendation. And then my other recommendation, and this is a kid's book as well, but Thunder Cake by Patricia Polacco. Have you read that one?
I think I did when I was going to school to be a teacher, but I don't remember it super well.
So she's actually from the area I grew up in. And so I feel like we read a lot of her books in elementary school.
Yeah.
And so the story of Thunder Cake follows a girl who's scared of thunderstorms, and her babushka actually like race around to gather ingredients for what they call Thunder Cake, which has to be made while it's thundering and lightning. And so the book like distracts, the story is that the girl's like distracted from her fear by having this like connection and fun with her grandma. And so it just kind of reminded me of Kirsten's, again, journey and like the general theme of continuing on even when you're scared. But the folk art in this book is just so good. And so it gives a lot of Kirsten's like overall vibes, even if the story isn't something you're super interested in. But I love all of Patricia Polacco's books and those like very cozy, folky vibes in her illustrations and the stories in general.
Yeah, she's definitely huge, I think, in Michigan, but she's big throughout the country as well. So probably a lot of listeners, if the name doesn't ring a bell, if you saw some of her covers, you probably would recognize some of them. She has a lot of really great books, and definitely something that we read them growing up, but I really learned a lot about them when I was becoming a teacher. All right, great recommendations. I did read Chasing Redbird as an adult, and I read it as a kid and an adult, and it was still very good. The name Zinni is one that I think is so cute. Yes. I thought about it with like, if we
good
had a second.
Flower names.
Yeah, yes. It's just cute. But
Zinni and Veda.
Yeah, I thought that would be really cute.
So cute.
I know. So who knows? TBD. And I do have one as well. Mine is also a kid's book. So sorry, today we're just going down like the children's lit route. But for Kirsten, I just had to recommend a book that goes really well with the time period, and it's also tied to American Girl in a way. So
I love that.
Do you remember Amelia's Notebook series? I think we talked about it.
Yes,
together. Yes. So the author Marissa Moss, she has a few other books as well, and she has this series that is following historical girls, and it's their diaries. And so it's a similar style to Amelia's Notebook, but it's historical. And so there's one specifically called Rachel's Journal, the story of a pioneer girl.
Okay.
And there's four of these books that are historical. One of them that's Pioneer. And this is the only one I owned. So I had this one growing up. And it just tells a story about traveling for 7 months on the Oregon Trail. So it's not like exactly Kirsten's story, but Kirsten does also have travel in covered wagon for mm-hmm. a little bit of her journey as well. And so some of it will line up. And it is set in 1850, so very close in time to Kirsten. So I think if you're reading about this series, like this, you know, Meet Kirsten, you want to read more about this time period, this is a great one to pair with it because it's super fun. Just the style of having the, you know, illustrations and the handwritten journal. And so I really recommend the historical series from Marissa Moss as well. So this is Rachel's Journal, The Story of a Pioneer Girl.
That's so similar. It's so funny that there's so many series like this because my other rec that I didn't talk about was Dear America. And they have Hattie Campbell's Diary, which is Across the Wide and Lonesome Prairie. So very similar story. Yeah. So if you like frontier times, pioneer times, the Great Migration, you have a lot of choices to choose from kids lit.
All right, now let's talk about our craft and snack. I believe you did a craft. Is that correct?
Yes, I did.
All right, what did you do?
So I did the Dala horse, which is a traditional just kind of souvenir from Sweden. So it originated in Dalarna, Sweden, which is where the name comes from. And I just think they're super cute. So that's why I chose it. I'm kind of in the process of reorganizing my bookshelves and library, and I thought it would be cute next to all of my American Girl stuff. So I ended up painting one, and then I was looking at the symbolism of all the colors on them too. But I ended up painting it red, and then it has some details on it. And red apparently symbolizes joy. So I just thought that was like fitting for the story, and just I liked the color. And then as far as like rating it goes, I had cost as a 4. I got my horse from Kathy Cutts on Etsy, so highly recommend. It was pretty inexpensive, so it's pretty affordable to do as a craft, and you can't really find them easily on Amazon either, so love supporting a small business. Ease, I would say, is a 3. I feel like the size of the horse made it a little bit hard to
paint. It was smaller?
Yeah, it was smaller. So, and if depending on the amount of design you want to put on it, I feel like it can also be a little bit tricky, and I love to paint. So I also just made it as complicated as I had to. So usability is a 5. I mean, it's a cute decoration, and that's really what it's meant for. So I think overall I gave it a 4.
These are something that I've been wanting to get at least one or two ever since reading Remarkably Bright Creatures. Have you read that book?
Oh, yeah.
So that's like a big, it's kind of like a big plot point in the book.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. So the main character has a collection of these and she's missing one of them, and she has this collection that she loves. And yeah, it's just kind of part of the book that was really sweet. And I've seen these in stores and they're kind of expensive. Like to buy just like sort of a, I don't know, a size that's bigger than, slightly bigger than your palm, it's like $50.
Yeah. So they are like heirloom.
Yes.
I feel like quality when you see them in stores. So definitely worth the price, but also can be a little bit unaffordable depending on your budget. So
yes. Yeah. So making your own is potentially an option if that's something that you want to collect. So that's super fun. I think I'm going to make one too for a future episode.
Yeah.
I might try to make it with clay. So we'll see how that goes. But I'm not exciting. A painter like Katie is. So I'm sure mine will
yours
be a
is going to be so cute. even prefacing it. I just know. Yeah. And my family's like part Swedish too, so I think it was just like fun to kind of incorporate that too. And then my sister brought me back some like little clogs, like Dutch clogs from her Europe trip, so I just am starting to have this very folk art like Northern European collection of decor. So
I love that
leaning
style.
Into it.
I love, like, you know how Kirsten's, we'll talk about it in a minute, but how her stuff has like all of the decorative painting on
yes.
it. So I've seen people do that in their house. They're like, why not, like putting sort of, you know, maybe like a little bit of folk art around an archway in their house.
My friend just did that, and it's so cute.
I love that idea, and I think if I was more skilled I would consider it, because we have some definitely spots in our house that could use a little bit of fun artwork like that. But I love that.
And I'm on Art Talk too, and there's this girl who for a long time was painting secret paintings in her house.
Oh,
so like
cool.
On furniture or like in a corner of a doorway, she would paint a little thing, and she made it a series until her husband found a painting. And I think she made it like over 3 weeks of painting these little things, and it was so fun.
That's cool. I love when people do like little fun surprises like that, or like I've seen people do little doorway, like painting little doorways, yes, on like the bottom of their floor as if it's like a, yes, mouse, like door, a, or something,
fairy door.
Yeah, fairy, yeah. Okay, so I did do a recipe this time, and I did the potato soup, which, yum, I feel like that's maybe the most talked about, in at least in things I've seen, from her recipe book. And so I wanted to give that a try.
Yeah. Very classic.
Yeah. I've never made a potato soup before. And I did make the carrot soup for Samantha. I will say I think I prefer the carrot soup, surprisingly.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I do love potato soup. I would say for the potato soup, the cost, I would say, is a 3.5. Bacon is kind of expensive. And I don't usually have, like, I think that calls for like heavy cream or something like that, which I don't usually have. So I, yeah, had to purchase that. So I would say a 3.5. It's not, you know, potatoes are cheap, so that's nice. And I think a lot of the stuff, you know, I didn't use all the bacon either. So like if you were going to make this multiple times, it would be more cost effective. And we did obviously use the bacon for, I made BLTs. So like,
right,
that was nice. But I would say the ease was a 4. You know, it's just like chopping things, cooking the bacon. I would say this would maybe be a harder one in some ways to make with a child, because like I wouldn't want a child to be making bacon, since that can get really hot and messy.
Yeah, or cutting potatoes.
Yeah.
With a large knife. So
they, yeah, could help you maybe put the stuff in the pot and stir it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would be a little bit tricky, in my opinion, with a younger kid at least.
Absolutely.
And then I would say the taste, I probably would give a 3. It was kind of bland to me. I followed the directions exactly, so I made it how it was supposed to be, and then at the end I did add a bunch more salt into it.
Yeah.
So that helped a little bit. But I'll also say, this must be something that's a me thing, but I followed the directions exactly as I said, and I did wait for the potatoes to be soft enough to mash. But they were still a little bit chunky, just like when I made the carrot soup. And, yeah, so the texture wasn't super creamy. So that to me was the biggest issue. I almost feel like I needed to put it into a blender or something to like make it, yeah, smooth enough. Or maybe I just needed to mash it and like put butter with, I don't know. Maybe I just needed to do the order of it differently to get it to be smoother. But yeah, it was a little bit chunky. And I didn't love that. So I think my overall is going to be a 3.
I think that's fair. I think we're also in America, and so we're so used to like a loaded potato soup with, yeah, like celery or carrots or like a baked potato soup. So I feel like just having bacon and potato would be kind of hard to like really love.
Yeah, like exactly. I think I just expect more flavor now at this point when, yes, I'm having soup. So,
and potatoes just absorb salt like nobody's business. So I, yeah, feel like that's also really hard.
Yes.
When you're making a soup.
Yeah. It didn't call for a lot of salt to begin with. I can't remember how much off the top of my
They're
head.
So but, healthy.
Well, and then I added a bunch after that.
As you should.
I think I also added, now I'm thinking about it, I added more butter too. I put in extra butter and I put in extra salt. And I did also get out some sour cream, and we put some sour cream on top. Which,
you're following the acid, salt, heat, fat,
I mean,
method.
Grace. It did help, but yes. It's still, yeah, I still prefer the carrot soup if I was going to choose one of the American Girl soups.
All right.
So
good to know.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's finish up by talking about Kirsten the doll herself. So, Katie, do you want to describe her as a doll and her outfit?
Yes. So Kirsten is a blonde doll, very Swedish hairstyle. So she's got bangs and the braided loops in her hair with the blue ribbon. And then her meat dress that we learn about in the first book is actually given to her by her cousin. And it's like a cornflower blue prairie dress, long sleeved. It's got white collars and trim around the sleeves. And then it's got red flowers on it as a pattern. She also comes with some brown leather boots and then a red pinstriped apron. And then for her accessories, she's got a red gingham bonnet, which I feel like if you're going to get Kirsten, you have to get her with all of her accessories. Like, it's just not an option to not get the bonnet.
It makes such a difference to, yes, have. And then her little, you're going to talk about it in a sec, but her little spoon.
I know. So yeah, then her accessories also come with a little spoon holder, which is like a handmade felt, like almost belt, with a pocket. And it's got like, it's again that cornflower blue with red accents. So very Swedish color scheme we've got going on here. And then it's got 1854 stitched on the front on a heart and a little wooden spoon, which is so tiny. And I did have this when I had Kirsten. So again, have to get the accessories with her. She also has a handkerchief, which comes up in the second book quite a bit. And that one's just like kind of an embroidered edge handkerchief. And then she's got an amber necklace, which was a gift from her grandmother. So very cute accessories, very just very cohesive set.
Yes, it all. I think of all the meet outfits with accessories, this is maybe the one to me that feels like the most cohesive is the best word. You know, like they just belong together. You need to get them to make the outfit. I think the other girls, it's like they add something, but it doesn't always feel as needed.
Yeah.
This one, I feel like it just, it all works so well together. It's so cute.
You have to have a bonnet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks so adorable on her.
It does.
And I'm going to talk about her trunk because that is definitely mentioned in this book. Kirsten came with a trunk. It was first introduced in 1986 and it retired in 2009. It was originally a $150 and it eventually increased to $159. And I love her trunk because it's like she has a very specific shade of blue that's associated with her collection. And it's like a dusty blue almost. Yes. And I just love it. It's a really nice shade. And then it has that decorative painting that we were talking about. It has this like floral artwork, and the floral artwork is red and green, and it's on the lid and the sides. And then on the two like short sides, there is a heart-shaped cutout for you to like hold the trunk, which is really sweet as well. And this, you know, these trunks, I think it's easy to forget that they're huge. Like this would fit Kirsten in it as well as a lot of her collection. So really great value because it's not only beautiful, but also functional.
Yeah. And I love this style. It just reminds me of my grandma's house. She had like a ton of things in this like blue color, like a lot of the like detailed woodwork with like a heart cutout or like some sort of like just detailing on it. So it just is very nostalgic, even though.
Is that the side of your family that's Swedish?
No, actually.
Oh. I didn't know if that
side's
like
English. Yeah.
Very, very cute. And I do also want to point out this. I think at one point I said Kirsten, and I know Katie says Kirsten, but I typically say Kirsten. So for listeners, apologies that that's probably not confusing, but maybe like frustrating, especially for me that I change. I think I like am someone who I will mimic other people's language. So, but I used to say Kirsten. That was my cousin's name growing up. So I loved that connection. And you having the doll, like you call her Kirsten. So she's
Kirsten. I think I switch back and forth though too.
Oh, do you?
Without realizing it. Yeah.
I do know like the way that, because I was a Kirsten diehard, and then I watched an American Girl video, and in that they said Kirsten. So I was like, okay, well, I don't know.
They both sound great, but sorry to listeners, because we'll be switching back and forth. And if anybody knows the correct pronunciation, let us know.
Yes. Okay, well, that is everything for our Meet Kirsten episode. Thank you for listening, and we hope you tune into a future episode soon.